We can talk about the Armenian Genocide and tell you about the 2 million people who were killed. But sometimes, when we hear a number like 2 million, it can become a statistic, cold and distant. But we should never forget, each of those 2 million was a person, a father, a mother, a son, a daughter, a sister, a brother. Each had a name, a voice, and a life. Today, we're going to tell you just one story, one name, one life. A girl named Aurora. She was one out of 2 million. Welcome back to the Church History Podcast. I'm your host, Laura Lee. Before we dive into today's episode, a quick reminder. I've written two books exploring the incredible story of church, including its early growth and challenges. You can find both books on Amazon, and links are in the show notes. Today, we're continuing our series, The Church at War. In our previous episode, we explored the chaos of World War I and how the church experienced that war. Today, we're going to explore a piece of that war that many people have forgotten, the Armenian Genocide. Before we begin, though, I want to say something important to my listeners, especially to the families and younger audience members who join me each week. I love that you're here, and I love that you're learning church history along with us. However, today's episode delves into some very dark and painful history. And while I'm going to take great care not to describe traumatic events in graphic detail, the story does involve telling violence, loss, and abuse against women that was suffered during the Armenian Genocide. Because of this, I recommend that parents listen to this episode first to decide if it's appropriate for the younger members of the family. This is a difficult but an important story, and one that deserves to be told with honesty and care. Now, before we begin, we need to understand the setting, the rise and the fall of the Ottoman Empire. The Ottoman Empire was one of the longest-standing Islamic empires in history. It lasted from the year 1299 until 1922. It was founded by Osman I in the chaos following the fall of the Sinkun dynasty. The Ottomans began as warriors on horseback, raiding the crumbling Byzantine frontier. They grew in power and eventually captured Constantinople in the year 1453 under Sultan Mehmed II, which ended the Byzantine Empire and transformed Constantinople into the empire's new capital, Istanbul. At its height, under Solomon the Magnificent, the Ottomans controlled a vast territory stretching all the way from Hungary to the Persian Gulf and even large parts of North Africa. They maintained a centralized government through their sultans, elite Janissary troops, and the Devanshire system. For centuries, the Ottoman system allowed religious minorities, including Christians like the Armenians, to enjoy some degree of limited autonomy. However, the decline began after the year 1683. There was a long line of failed wars, internal corruption, and nationalist uprising that weakened the empire. We discussed the Greeks fighting back from the Ottoman Empire and regaining their freedom after 400 years of captivity, and I will include a link to that episode in the show notes. The Industrial Revolution left the Ottoman Empire economically behind, and its debt to the European banks further diminished its sovereignty. Despite reform efforts and the rise of the Young Turks, the Ottoman Empire was crumbling by the 1900s. And into that weakness came war. World War I erupted in 1914 with the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand. The war spiraled as allies pulled nation after nation into the conflict. The world was on fire, and into this inferno stepped the Ottoman Empire. In November of 1914, the Ottomans joined the Central Powers, Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Bulgaria. They hoped to regain lost territory and shake off the European interference. Their war minister had secretly aligned with Germany and launched an attack on Russia. This decision would have catastrophic consequences for the empire and for the Armenian Christian minority. On April the 24th, 1915, more than 200 Armenian intellectuals and leaders were arrested and executed in Istanbul. This was the beginning of what would become a full-class campaign of extermination. Armenian Christians, who had long been tolerated under the system, were now branded enemies of the state. The Ottoman government began to deport entire Armenian communities. Men were separated and executed. Women, children, and the elderly were forced into death marches across the desert. Many were raped, tortured, sold into slavery. Pregnant women gave birth on the roadside without aid. Children were kidnapped, families torn apart. The Euphrates River became a graveyard. Rivers ran red. Villages were emptied. And for those who survived, life would never be the same. And one of the girls who went through this was named Aurora Mardiganian. And today, we tell her story. Aurora Mardiganian was born on January 12, 1901, into a wealthy Armenian Christian family in the Ottoman Empire. Her father was a respected man in the province, and her family name carried honor and dignity. They lived in comfort and peace, with strong roots in the Christian faith. Although the Ottoman Empire was Islamic, Armenians had lived under Ottoman rule for generations. Armenia, after all, was the first nation to adopt Christianity as its official religion. I explore that history in my first book, The Church is Born. But the peace would not last. During World War I, the Islamic regime turned against the Armenian Christians. The change came swiftly and violently. One night, as war crept closer to town, a Kurdish shepherd came to the Mardiganian family with a dire warning. "The Ottoman soldiers are coming." Aurora's father listened, but refused to run. "If I run, I'm a coward," he said. "If I must die, I will die in my home." Within days, Ottoman troops flooded the town. All Armenian men over the age of 18 were ordered to assemble in the public square. Aurora's father was forced to leave. Aurora's brother, Pororas, tried following in the distance so he could see where his father was going. But he walked toward his faith. He was seen by the soldiers and forced into the line. Neither father nor son returned. The morning after the men were taken, Aurora woke to a town that would never be the same. Soldiers had posted crude posters on every wall, every gate, every marketplace corner, each stamped with the Ottoman seal. The order chilling. All Armenian women were to be ready to leave their homes in exactly 3 days. No belongings, no explanations, just obedience. In those 3 days, the soldiers didn't rest. They marched through the street in pairs, their boots clattering on the stone roads like war drums. They entered homes at wills, seized anything of value, spoons, lamps, rugs, family heirlooms. They stripped households bare, not just of possessions, but of dignity and hope. On the second day, as Aurora walked along the edge of the alley to fetch water, a soldier blocked her path. He was tall, his uniform dusty. His eyes didn't blink. "You," he said, "you pretty Christian girls, you're ours now. Give yourself to a Turk or die." Aurora froze. The weight of those words crushed her. In that instant, she understood what it meant to be prey. But something in her refused to bend. She twisted free from his grip and ran, her heart pounding, her legs burning. When she reached her home, she collapsed inside, trembling. She said nothing, but her silence said everything. As the third day dawned, dread hung over the town. As Aurora's mother moved quietly, preparing her daughters, there were no tears, there was urgency. "There is still one chance," she whispered. "Go to Miss Graham." Miss Elizabeth Graham was an Englishwoman who had traveled from the American college. She had come to this remote corner of the empire to teach orphaned Armenian girls. She had even helped Aurora when she was younger, teaching her letters, and she also taught kindness and the idea that someone from far away could care. "Miss Graham will help you," their mother said, pressing their hands. "Go tonight, but don't let anyone see you." Aurora and her sister Lucien nobbed, their hands clasped together tightly. There was no time for fear, only hope that Miss Graham was still there. The moon hung over the rooftops as Aurora and Lucien crept through the shadows of their town. The night was unnaturally quiet. There were no dogs barking, no singing from courtyards, no voices. It was as if the very soul of the town had been silenced. They moved swiftly from side alleys, staying close to the walls, and made their way toward the orphanage where Miss Graham lived and taught. As they approached the school, they came to a halt. There, in the glow of the flickering lantern, an Ottoman policeman was dragging Miss Graham away. Her gray shawl had fallen from her shoulders, and her arms frailed against his grip. Another soldier was inside the school, herding the terrified orphan girls like cattle. Miss Graham shouted in protest. She kicked and screamed, even as the officer clamped his hand over her mouth. Aurora and Lucien ducked behind a stack of crates, hearts pounding. They watched, horrified, as the teacher who had once recited English poetry with them was hauled away like a criminal. The girls she had cared for vanished into the hands of the soldiers. Aurora knew then they were too late. Miss Graham could not help them. Terrified, the little sisters debated what to do. Should they go to the town square where their mother might be waiting, or should they hide? The decision came quickly. There was no safety in the open. They turned and slipped back into the maze of streets, making their way back to their own home, which was now deserted. Inside, the silence was deafening. The furniture had been ransacked. Broken crockery crunched under their feet. Aurora led Lucien to the attic and pulled the ladder up behind them. It was dusty and dark, the air heavy with heat. They lay down side by side, exhausted. Somehow, they fell asleep. A sharp jolt awake Aurora. A man stood over her, sword in hand. She tried to cry out, but before she could move, he kicked her hard in the ribs. She grasped as pain surged through her. Shouts were echoed from downstairs, more men tearing through their home, looting for what little was left. Lucien woke and screamed as four men surrounded her. Aurora crawled toward her sister, but one of the men grabbed her by her arm and hurled her back. Her vision blurred as she hit her head. She watched helplessly as they tore off Lucia's veil and cloak. The leader of the group set down his sword and his gun and then joined the others. The men abused Lucien one at a time until each had had their way with her. When they were done, Aurora crawled to her side. Her sister's body was curled in on itself, her face streaked with tears, her body covered in blood. Aurora dropped to her knees. "Please," she begged the men, "take me to the town square. My mother is there. We have money. I can get you money." One of the men grunted and nobbed and allowed Aurora to leave, but Lucia had to stay behind. Aurora ran to the square. Her mother was there, surrounded by other women, faces blank, bodies hollow. She had with her her little brothers and sisters. Aurora whispered to her what had happened. Her mother pressed two coins into her palm. Aurora ran back, the coins clenched so tightly her knuckles went white. She handed the money to her officer, who took it without a word. Then, without looking at her, he threw Lucien onto the ground like discarded cloth. Lucien was barely conscious, but she was alive. And now they were out of time. Soldiers began dragging every Armenian woman and child from their homes. Those who had not voluntarily gathered were now forced into the square at gunpoint. The march was about to begin. Aurora, Lucien, and the other women joined the throngs of frightened faces, clutching children, grasping each other's hands. The soldier barked, "You're being taken to a safe place." But they all knew the truth. There was no safe place now. The road out of town was silent, except for the shuffling of thousands of feet, bare, bruised, and bleeding. Aurora walked with Lucien beside her, her fingers intertwined. Around them were hundreds of Armenian women and children, forced from their homes under the watchful eye of armed Ottoman soldiers. The first night on the march fell with no mercy. They were herded like cattle into the open field. No tents, no blankets, no fire, just dirt, dust, and fear. As darkness swallowed the sky, the sounds began, sobbing, screaming, struggling. Aurora held Lucien close as drunken soldiers stumbled through the rows of frightened women. They picked out girls like they were shopping in a market, dragged them into the shadows to abuse them. Some girls returned traumatized, unable to speak. Others never returned. Aurora stayed awake all night, body tense, eyes darting in every direction. She knew sleep meant vulnerability, and vulnerability meant ruin. The next night was the same, and the next. Each evening brought more torment, more girls taken, more cries muffled in the darkness. The soldiers didn't just abuse the women, they laughed while doing it, as if cruelty was a game to them. Children were especially at risk. Some vanished during the nights, snatched away and sold to wealthy Ottoman or Muslim families. Aurora and Lucine took turns staying awake, burying their younger siblings in dirt and scraps of fabric, trying to camouflage them from the guards' prowling eyes. By day, the sun was merciless. By night, the horror came. Week after week, the column of refugees stumbled onward, forced across desolate roads and empty plains. When women collapsed, soldiers beat them with sticks until they would rise. If they couldn't walk, they were left behind to die in the desert. As they marched through village after village, Aurora realized this was not an isolated tragedy. In every single town, Armenians were rounded up, homes were looted, churches desecrated and burned. No one was spared. Sometimes villagers came to the camps, ordinary Turkish citizens. They came to take the little things the women had. They would take pieces of jewelry, maybe a copper pot. They would even take locks of hair. Sometimes they came for the women themselves. In one of the towns, Aurora saw something she would never forget. A group of young girls, barely older than children. They had been brutalized, tortured, and then impaled on sharpened wooden stakes in the shape of crosses. Their bodies twisted in pain, desecrated in unspeakable ways. Aurora saw this. She turned and clutched Lucien's hand even tighter. There was no name for this kind of evil. They walked past and then continued, still marching. After weeks on foot, their feet torn, open, blistered, the survivors reached the banks of the Euphrates River, and for a moment there was hope. The sound of rushing water called out like a miracle. The river was wide, its current strong, but to the Armenians it was life. Dozens of women and children broke from the columns and rushed towards the edge. Falling to their knees, they scooped up water to their cracked lips. Aurora followed with Lucine. Her mouth was dry. Her skin burned from the desert sun. But as she neared the edge of the river, she stopped. And she wasn't the only one. A terrible silence rippled through the crowd, like wind through dry grass. Then, one by one, people began to scream. The Euphrates ran red. Bodies floated down the current, bloated, broken, dismembered. Hundreds, thousands. They were the corpses of American men, women, and children. They drifted by. Limbs tangled in brush drifted by. Faces frozen in pain. Heads bobbed grotesquely on the surface. Arms sticking up into the air as if still reaching for help. Aurora fell to her knees, too horrified to cry. She had four baby siblings with her, and her mother and her sister. They all stood beside her in silence. Then one of the guards barked an order, "Onto the boats." Aurora's head snapped up. Soldiers were forcing the women and children onto rafts and barges to ferry them across the water. Aurora thought this was strange. After so much marching, why not just walk around? But there was no time to think. Soldiers grabbed Aurora and Lucine, shoving them towards the boat. Mothers clutched their children tightly as they were crowded aboard. Once aboard and into the water, the horror came. As the boats reached the center of the river, the soldiers began pulling the children from their mothers' arms. Babies, toddlers, little boys and girls picked up and hurled into the water. Screams split the air. One after another, tiny bodies hit the surface and disappeared beneath the blood-soaked current. Aurora let go of Lucien's hand and grabbed the hands of her younger siblings. But soldiers came and grabbed them, forced them from her hands. Her hands, Lucien's hands, and her mother's hands. First Sarah overboard, then Jovan. then her two brothers. Each was ripped away, each thrown into the river like trash. Aurora screamed until her voice was silent. Lucien held her as she collapsed onto the boat's deck. Her mother, completely broken, could only stare into the water. When they reached the far bank, only Aurora, Lucien, and her mother remained of the family. Everybody else was gone. The Euphrates had taken her siblings. The desert still threatened to take the rest of them. The march resumed as if nothing had happened. The survivors, broke by grief and sickness, staggered back into formation. Each step was a rebellion, a refusal to die. Each breath, defiance. Aurora stayed close to Lucien and her mother. Lucien had never been the same since that terrible night in the attic, and now she was even weaker. Her eyes no longer focused, and she refused to speak. One night, as the group stopped to rest, Aurora helped her mother lower Lucien gently into a patch of dry earth. The older woman collapsed next to her, too exhausted to comfort either of her daughters. Then the soldiers came, drunk as always. They were prowling the camp, searching for anyone who hadn't yet died. And Lucien caught the eye of one of them. He dragged her by her hair, ignoring her mother's cries. Aurora chased after him, screaming. She clawed at his arm, and he shoved her to the ground. Lucien fought with the little strength that she had left. The soldier grew enraged, and in his anger, he pulled a knife from his belt and stabbed her. Once, twice, three times, then left her there, bleeding in the dirt. Aurora crawled to her sister's side. Lucien's breaths were shallow, her hand twitching. She reached for something that wasn't there. Aurora took her hand and held it tightly and whispered her name over and over and over again. That night, Lucien died in her arms. The sun was starting to rise. Aurora knew she'd be forced to march on, but she could not leave her sister's body for the animals or the wind to take. With trembling fingers, her and her mother began to dig. The earth was hard and dry, but they clawed at it anyway. Their fingernails split, their hands bled, but still they dug. When the hole was barely deep enough, they laid Lucien inside, smoothed her hair, straightened her torn dress, and whispered a prayer, then covered her with sand. That was goodbye. And then they stood up and walked on, because they had to continue their march through the desert. That night, the wind changed. Aurora had learned to recognize danger in the air. It was like a scent or a rhythm. And as the camp settled into an uneasy sleep, there was a new sound that came. It was distant, like thunder. And then she knew what it was. Hooves. Dozens of them. Aurora sat up. There was a swarm of riders, Kurds on horseback, their silhouettes outlined by the moonlight. They galloped into the camp with wild shouts and gunshots. The Armenian women scattered. The soldiers did nothing. They simply stood back and watched. Aurora's mother panicked. She grabbed handfuls of mud from the ground. She smeared it all over Aurora's face. She matted her hair and covered her arms. "Hide," she whispered. "Be ugly." But it wasn't enough. One of the Kurds dismounted and walked straight towards them. He ripped Aurora's veil from her head, wiped the mud from her cheeks, and stared at her. Then he grabbed her by the arm, tore off her dress, and threw her across the saddle. Aurora screamed for her mother, kicking and struggling. She tried to throw herself beneath the horse's hooves. She'd rather die. But then she hit her head and everything blurred into darkness. When she awoke, she was cold, aching, and alone in a strange camp filled with other young Armenian girls. She sat in silence, eyes hollow, bodies trembling. A man, one of the leaders, entered and barked orders. Anyone who didn't rise fast enough was whipped. Then came the market. The Kurds came to barter. Girls were inspected like livestock, teeth clenched, arms examined, hips pinched. One by one, they were sold. But Aurora wasn't sold. The leader had plans just for her. That night, she was thrown onto a horse and taken deep into the mountains, to the house of a Kurdish warlord named Kemal. His home was large and well-kept, filled with strange decorations and armed guards everywhere. He brought her to a small room and examined her. His eyes were calm and his words were measured. He asked her about her family. So she told him all the details, that all she had left was her mother. He asked, "Would you give up your Christian faith if I could find them for you?" Rora hesitated. She was tired, afraid, broken in ways she didn't even have the words for. "If I say yes," she thought, "maybe I could see my mother again." So she whispered, "Yes." Inside, she cried, "God, please forgive me." The next morning, he took her riding, claiming they would find her family. But as they passed a river, Aurora felt something inside of her. This wasn't a salvation. This was a trap. In desperation, she jumped from the horse and ran. Behind her, Kamal was shouting. Ahead of her, a cliff. But she didn't stop. She ran straight towards the cliff and jumped. Rora hit the water with a crash. The cold shocked her lungs and for a minute stole her breath. But she didn't stop. She kicked and pushed herself toward the far bank, away from Kamal, away from the nightmare. Once she reached the other side, she dragged herself onto the rocky shore, soaked and shivering, her torn clothes clinging to her body. But she was free. It was a bitter kind of freedom. There was no family waiting, no shelter, no food. She was free, but all around her was nothing but Syrian desert, hot, fast, and filled with death. And so she walked. For days, she wandered through the heat and the silence, her skin blistered by the sun, her lips cracking, her stomach twisted with hunger. Along the way, she would pass bodies of other Armenians, some fully exposed, others half buried in the sand. There was children, women. The desert had become a graveyard without any tombstones. She kept walking. And then she saw something familiar. A scarf. A piece of cloth she had last seen wrapped around her mother's shoulders. Aurora rushed forward and found her. Her mother lay crumpled in the sand. Her eyes closed. Her skin gray. Her body had been left where she fell. She was just one more corpse among thousands. Aurora dropped to her knees and cried. "I didn't even see you die, but I found you. I found you." There was no strength left for her to dig a grave this time. She gathered some stones and placed them gently around her mother's body. It's all she could do. And then she had to leave. She stood and she walked away. And then, as she walked along this endless road, she came across another familiar face. There, among the corpse, one tiny face, a cousin, just a toddler, but then still alive. He had been with one of Aurora's aunts, but the child had somehow survived a massacre that had taken the others. Aurora scooped up her little cousin and hugged him. This might be the only relative she still had alive. She put him down, took his hand, and together, Aurora and the little boy marched on. Then they came across a group of marching captives. The soldiers thought Aurora and her cousin were part of the group, and Aurora knew the only way to survive was to join the group and act as if she had always been with them. Once in the group, Aurora found two more relatives, two aunts, and she had family again. She stuck close to her aunts and for a moment felt some hope. The heat was growing worse. The desert was painted with blackened bodies. It was nothing but charcoal silhouettes of what had once been people. They were forced to sit on the corpses. The guards would stop and force them to sit on the corpses. And soon, more soldiers came. One of the soldiers recognized Aurora's aunts and remembered that her family had been very wealthy. They demanded gold. "We have nothing left," her aunt cried. The soldiers didn't care. They raised their rifles and opened fire. Aurora stood there watching as her two aunts fell, lifeless. She couldn't even scream. She picked up her cousin, the toddler, and shielded his body with her own. The soldiers grabbed her by her hair, whipped her with horse's reins, and mocked her. "There will be no Armenians left," he said. "You're all dogs." Then they ordered her to search the corpses of her aunts to rifle through their pockets, to lift their blood-soaked fabric and look to see if any gold was there. It was a cruelty so vile, she nearly lost her mind. But she didn't. She survived. And she held her small cousin tightly and waited for her chance to escape. Aurora knew she could not bear to lose the child, not after everything else. She'd already buried siblings, a sister, her mother, her aunts. But this boy, this little cousin, clung to her neck, and he was still breathing, and as long as he was, she would keep going. She watched the guards carefully. One of them, a younger soldier, seemed less cruel than the others. He never laughed during beatings, and he didn't speak much. He seemed to just watch. One night, as the camp lay in fitful sleep, Aurora approached him. She said, "Please, help us escape. Let us go. It's all I ask." The soldier looked at her. Then he looked at the child in her arms, and he nodded. That night, under the cover of darkness, he led them to the edge of the camp. He pointed towards the hills in the distance. "Walk that way," he said, "and don't stop. I won't follow." Then he turned and walked away. Aurora carried the boy for hours. The terrain was cruel. Her feet bled, her lips were split, but she didn't stop. And then, as the dawn painted the sky pink, she saw a village in the horizon. She approached it slowly, wondering if she'd be met with kindness or cruelty. And as she stumbled into the first alley, a woman stepped out of the doorway. She was Kurdish. She looked at Aurora, at this half-dead little boy in her arms. Without a word, she opened her door and ushered them inside. Inside there was bread, water, a cot with a real blanket. The woman and her husband nursed them both back to health. They didn't ask questions, and they didn't expect anything in return. They simply offered what they had. It was the first safety Aurora had known in months. As the days passed, the child regained strength, and then one day, he smiled. Aurora looked at him, a smile. She had almost forgotten what that looked like. But safety never lasts. One night, lying on a mat in the corner of the small house, she overheard the couple whispering to each other. The Ottoman army was collapsing, and there were rumors of survivors who were gathering. Free Armenians, men who had survived, alive, and rebuilding. Aurora's heart leapt. But now she had to choose. Could she take the child with her, risking exposing him to danger? Or should she leave him in the care of the only kind people that they had met? She laid there all night wondering, and at dawn she had her answer. She kissed the boy's forehead and tucked the blanket around him one last time, and then walked out the door, alone again, but not without purpose. And that is where we pause Aurora's story. Her journey is far from over. Next week, we're going to return to hear more about her story and find out what happens when Aurora reaches a monastery filled with Armenian refugees, only to have safety ripped away once again. She's going to face bandits, another brutal camp, and a moment of life or death decision with a knife in her hand. Yet through every trial, Aurora refuses to give up, refuses to once again deny her faith. She survives not just for herself, but so she can bear witness to the truth and tell everyone how she was just one story, one in 2 million. She would be a voice for all.
If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app so you don't miss an episode. We release new content every Monday. And don't forget to check out our website at loraleesiemens.com for more information and additional resources. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week as we continue our journey through the incredible history of the church.